Greetings, everyone. I know Jermaine sincerely wish he could be here today to talk about this very important topic of paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes. And my brief presentation today is going to talk about a network Jermaine, Christina, and I are planning to develop to address this very important issue. Firstly, as we all know, infant mortality is a very, very important issue. And there's a health disparity between infant mortality rates, particularly among non-Hispanic black women and white women. As reported by the CDC in 2013, white women had an infant mortality rate of 5.1 per 1,000 live births, while black women nearly doubled that at 11.1. It's also important to note that in 2013, the National Center for Health Statistics reported that 72% of non-Hispanic black infants were born to single mother families, which is another disparity when you compare that to Hispanic and non-Hispanic white women infants who are single parent mothers. Another thing that's important to note that black infants who are part of those single family households, particularly those who are poor black infants, one third of those have little or no foreign involvement in their lives. Now we're looking at foreign involvement in child health and development. The literature shows that, you know, these infants that have little or no foreign involvement are at greater risk of having behavioral and educational problems, of greater risk of having poor developmental outcomes as well. It's also important to note on the other spectrum of that, that by having a father more involved with his child life, more involved with the mother of his child, there are positive outcomes as well, such as during pregnancy, we can potentially see early access to prenatal care. During and after pregnancy, mothers are more likely to stop smoking and using drugs. It is also important to note that fathers play a critical role in stress and a burden that can be experienced during pregnancy and also after. Because of the literature, because of things we see in the data, Jermaine, Christine, and I want to develop a paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes network. And this network will be the first of its kind in the United States to our knowledge. But what's of particular interest to us is that like 3 weeks ago, right before APHA, a global family network started in Australia and actually reached out to myself, Jermaine, to become a part of that network. So this is an idea that's a kind of a hot topic and something that a lot more researchers are exploring. But for our particular network, that's only going to be focused on the United States with a strong focus on fathers and their involvement in pregnancy outcomes, we have four very important objectives. Firstly, we want to improve the preconception and reproductive health of men and expectant fathers. This is very important because the literature shows that a lot of men, we don't get regular checkups. We hardly ever go to the doctor. Sometimes this can be referred to as a Superman syndrome. We think nothing's wrong with us, we can fight off any illness. That's why it's important for us to produce literature and research that states that not only is the mother and child health is important when it goes to their, you know, clinical visits and things of that nature, but the father, his health is also important and a critical piece to the family unit as well. And sometimes, you know, there may be a challenge for clinicians when the father or the husband or spouse is not present or not around, does not want to be involved. So how do we engage the father? How do we engage the husband to not only consider himself important for his own health, but also for his, the mother and child? And one of the ways that we plan on doing this is we are going to do a systematic review of the literature, try to find particular constructs and variables and even quantitative measures that look at men's health from a reproductive and preconception aspect. Secondly, we want to enhance male involvement in family planning and reproductive health initiatives. We want to, you know, address this objective by advocating for better contraceptive research and also looking at some policies that may hinder why fathers don't want to become involved in their family. And some of these policies may include welfare and child support. Thirdly, we want to promote more father-friendly clinical practices, hospital settings, and policies. And one of the simpler ways that we want to address this issue is by developing pamphlets that can be handed out as some of these clinical practices to the mother, to fathers, showing the father's importance, you know, during the mother's pregnancy and even afterwards. And some of the topics that we're looking at addressing is breastfeeding. We want fathers to know that they are important in the breastfeeding process. And you might ask, why is that? Because sometimes breastfeeding can be very difficult for the mother. And if the father or the husband or the spouse is there to support them through breastfeeding, know the important reasons why breastfeeding should be done, then maybe we can have higher breastfeeding rates. Smoking. A lot of times you may see, you know, mothers smoking during their pregnancy, or may see mothers smoking around their children. But if fathers know, or the spouse knows, important reasons why the mother should stop smoking, or if they're also a smoker, why they shouldn't smoke around the mother, or why they should maybe stop smoking together, then maybe we can decrease smoking rates during pregnancy and around the children after pregnancy. The fourth objective that we have is part of a national organization to raise awareness for importance of fathers in MCH. And we think this is a very, very critical piece to our network because a lot of research is being done in this field. So we want to make sure that we partner with more national organizations so they can include more sessions and more talks on why fathers are an important critical piece to maternal and child health. Jermaine works in D.C., so he has a lot of key partnerships with national organizations such as AmTrip. We have a wonderful partnership with APHA. That's why we started the Maternal Involvement and Pregnancy Outcomes Committee within the MCA section. And because of our excellent partnership, we're able to host sessions such as this. We want to continue doing this and bring awareness to the wonderful research that's being put out there today. Most of what you have seen today from the wonderful research we have here. So in order to carry out our objectives, we have a few short and long-term goals. Initially, when you start a network, you just can't jump out there and have, just grand this big idea, think you'll have a lot of members. So we're going to start our network, hopefully at the top of the year, with just a listserv. The listserv is primarily going to consist of our committee members, and then from there, we hope our committee members will branch out and embrace their colleagues who are interested in this concept, embrace a broader construct of APHA members, and even other colleagues and researchers across the globe who are interested in paternal involvement. Initially, we want to, for this listserv, we're going to be forwarding out different research about this concept so people can get updated what's going on, what's being studied. We also hope to facilitate collaborations amongst individuals who want to listserv so they can do scientific studies together, they can publish papers together, and also we're going to keep individuals updated on what webinar courses are out there, what talks are being out there on this site, what sessions at different conferences are taking place, so they can be up and informed about what's going on. Thirdly, we hope to get a grant to where we can develop a website. And the website will be a portal where the colleagues on our listserv can come and find out what we're doing as a committee, a part of APHA, what research is going on. We hope to eventually develop a webinar of courses that will focus on preconception health, reproductive health for men, as well as talk about the importance of maternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes. All these things we'll have listed on the website, as well as hopefully once we have a broader context of our colleagues who are a part of the network, who are part of the website, we can hold regional and even national conferences just mainly focused on this topic of maternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes and have expert speakers come and talk, have different sessions, and also poster presentations just focus on this area of research, which you think is very important and is moving forward at a high rate of speed. So in conclusion, fathers matter too. Sometimes in MCH, we just focus on mothers and children, and we leave out the critical piece of fathers that play an important role in the health of mothers and children. A lot of times when we see health disparities, we always ask ourselves, what can we do to decrease health disparities? A lot of times we get stuck in doing what has been done in the past, just publishing papers and just doing the same thing over and over again. We feel that looking at this in a unique way, putting research into practice and policy may be important ways that we can decrease health disparities. So by including fathers and making them not only, just an external factor, but important with mothers and children, maybe that's one effective way that we can hopefully decrease health disparities and also increase overall health for mothers and children. I'd like to thank you for coming to our presentation today, and we'd be glad to take any questions.
Back two slides of your slides?
Yes.
Okay, if I can figure out how to do this. Yeah, that was the slide I wanted. First of all, I have some questions. Are there questions, comments from the audience? Yes, go.
Thank you. Okay.
Any other comments from anybody else?
I'll take the prerogative of the chair. I think you are correct that ACEs, you know, we're watching, you know, the data is showing ACEs right in front of you, and it's affecting disproportionately, it's affecting young men. And so I put the slide up to come back to and to link some of the different people's talks. I just finished a study, you're not supposed to do this, but I just finished a study in which we surveyed every man who showed up for prenatal care in a two-week period at a very large Boston hospital, Boston General Hospital, Mass General Hospital. And we interviewed 401 fathers. And what I wanted to just say is that, to answer your question, one way to think about how to deal with ACEs is to really try to increase men's involvement with care both for their children and themselves from as early as possible, not waiting until they're born or even 6 months later, but to do it early. And so we were interested in looking at men as they came in for prenatal care. And the fact that was one of the most striking facts where they follow from different people's things, 35% of the men hadn't had a healthcare visit in the last year. 26% of the men on the national two-item questionnaire screeners for depression said yes. And so there's a very typical Boston sample. Poor, wealthy, 26%, 8% said actually fairly severe on the screeners. People were overweight, so there was a high mental health issue in the men, even early at the time of during the pregnancy period. It was stronger among poor, higher among poor women than more poor men than slightly wealthier men. I say this because I think that thinking about how to involve men during pregnancy, we need to think across the sort of lifespan and to try to increase as early as possible. I think that would be, it's a partial answer to your ACEs question, but ACEs would be a good thing to be looking at. Maybe we're about to survey thousands of women about ACEs, but are we going to survey thousands of men about ACEs and their experiences? They enter into care. I bet you they'll interact with some of the studies that people did. The comment over there. We can make this a general conversation and questions and conversation on it, this topic. Go ahead. Visiting. In home visiting. I happen to know an answer to that question, but maybe when I did my... I would say that it's a struggle. The home visiting world is struggling with trying to figure out... It's a perfect example of the... enhancing male involvement in family planning and reproductive health initiatives. Just not every MCH organization and program is so father-friendly. I think it's a real shift in our field to be, even to have this conversation, to be thinking about men. And so many of the organizations, I evaluate some home visiting programs in Massachusetts, and you know, there are some sites that do a fabulous job and have really worked hard. There's a group of people clearly conscious about that home visiting would be good. And I know that in the Boston metropolitan area, the home visiting program, the Children's Trust Fund, they thought that this was so important, they actually required each year that 5% more of their families have at least one visit to the father with the father present. And they've upped that number every year. They're at 60%. And you have to survey the men and the women equally about the questions, which I believe several of you were doing in your studies. But it's been a struggle. Many of the other home visiting programs say, we're already swamped, you know, gee, it's hard enough to get to talk to the moms. The dads aren't there. Maybe they'll interfere with the interaction, but maybe they facilitate the interaction. I know the Children's Trust Fund in Boston found that when the father was present during the home visit, that those families stayed longer in home visiting than the families where the fathers exist, but kind of walked into the back room and kind of disappeared and disengaged in this thing. And when they were engaged, they stay. I think our communities hasn't always been as supportive. Someone else had a comment on that. Yes, sir. Orin.
I actually had a question for one of our panelists, Dr. Yi Hua Chen. You, in your study, did you screen the fathers as well as the mothers independently for depression? I wasn't sure. You first presented, but then your tables indicated. So did you do it separately for the men and the fathers and the mothers? How did you do the depression screening for the two parents?
Yeah, that's a very important issue. Right.
You come up here.
Yeah, it's a very important issue. During the baseline assessment, we perform the EPDS in the outpatient center. So we make sure that mothers and fathers they answer the question separately because our interviewer was there. However, for the follow-up assessments, some of them are performed in the outpatient center, which our interview will be there to make sure that they are separate. However, if that it's done at home, we also use the postal mails. Then we have some directions that saying that, well, it's better that you have to answer the questions separately. However, we are not sure if they have some interaction. And that's indeed a very good issue to consider.
Yeah. I wanted to just compliment you.
Okay.
for interviewing separately the father. There's a technical issue whether they're separate or in the same room.
Yeah.
But the fact that you actually directly ask men questions about their mental health, that, you know, for too long the wives were asked, you know, or their partners were asked, well, how's your husband doing on this, rather than directly asking the men. And that really one of the ideas in this is to really be looking at the health of men. And that's the one thing I would have added to your list is, you know, I think this is in your list here, is, you know, is sort of how to enhance men's health. During the pregnancy period, it's a fabulous time. If it's a preconception health and pregnancy is a great time for women to think about changes in their lives and to improve
their health and to use that as a moment in a life course, like to be a break in the curve at that point. It's true for men too, and so interviewing men about it is actually really important. It begins to establish, that's what I'm going to ask you for your paper afterwards, because trying to demonstrate the impact of pregnancy on men's health, and you actually have it in your study, it's sort of there. You know, your figures showed, you should correct me, because you remember it, I only saw it on the slide, but did the men's depression increase or decrease? You know, and did you get two times you got their data? So you have repeat data. Did pregnancy increase depression, decrease depression for men?
Yeah.
I'd be interested in your thoughts on it. Sorry, I don't mean to dominate. Just
For fathers, it's interesting that higher depression was displayed in an early pregnancy. However, for anxiety, which is higher in the postpartum period. Yeah.
Was there a change? Did you look at the same fathers?
Yes.
Depression? How did depression change from before to after?
Okay. Yeah. For fathers, there's a relatively higher depressive level during pregnancy and then decreasing after childbirth. However, the anxiety level is lower during the prenatal period and increasing after the child, after delivery time.
So one important target out there would be why? Is it because they're not talking or not having sex? I mean, these things like this, I mean, why are they depressed? You know, why is it increasing? That'd be a really important question, because those little things that have to solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, that's important, and that's why we discussed something about intended or unintended pregnancy, and then especially higher for fathers, especially for unintended pregnancy, the depressive levels.
I thought I saw on your slides for prevalence of depression.
Yes.
Your threshold was at least 10 for women and at least 12 for men?
No. The other way around. 12 for women and then 10 for men.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you see any correlation between men and women with depression?
Yes. The correlation coefficient is somehow 0.5 to 0.6 along the perinatal periods. Yeah. Median.
Between the couples?
Yes, between the couple, the same couples.
That's actually a really interesting finding, the couple data on this. I wanted to ask one, just checking on time. Yeah. If there are other questions, I wanted to ask. Did I see? Yeah, please comment.
I'm sorry, I came in late, so this may have already been addressed. But one of the concerns that many of us have is attempting to really involve fathers in these services that we think of fathers. Disconnected with such things as jobs and ability of fathers to support their families, so that many of
like a mother's mother or a mother's mother or the mother's grandmother could be a really big roadblock to that. So how to interact and talk to them, but it's also job placement.
Well, I think if you take a very broad view of health, that allows you to address those kinds of issues because those are clearly affecting health, depression, the ACEs. These are really important issues, and I think the people in the men's the emerging men's health reproductive period, I think is very well aware of the pressures that. Not having jobs, there's core issues, not having jobs, there's all kinds of issues that make it really difficult, particularly for some of poorer men, to be available and to have the kind of capacity and supports. And I actually thought that was in several of the papers, and I thought your paper actually spoke to the issue of sort of, it's hard to give support if you don't have anything that you can offer. Which was actually the question I was going to ask you. Talked about partner support. It was just a single question or two in the PRAM, sort of limited set of questions. But did you have any sense of what the range of possible supports that people want or need? Was there any further elaboration of what supports? Because I think that speaks to the question that was asked. Or is it any comments you could make on the issue of sort of what are the supports? Was it all emotional support, or was it also financial, other kinds of supports?
I think both financial and emotional support are very important. First, they must, want to have the baby, right? Otherwise, mom will feel depressed or feel unsupported on that part. And also, we also have to to work with the employment status of the father and those issues in life, because if there's no standard income to this family, there's no way for both parents to support the growth of the baby and support the pregnancy of the mom.
Thank you. Any other comments from the panelists on any of these things? Well, I want to thank everybody in the audience. Obviously, this is a new topic in the MCH world and in the mental health world, and we've begun. And this panel did a very nice job. I thank them. So let's give them a round of applause.